Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of The Lap Down. I am your host, Greg Farmer, and with me tonight is Jamie, Ben, Valentino, and Ryan. How are we doing tonight, guys?
Doing great.
Doing good. Ben's chowing down on what looks like a chicken wing or something. That looks good over there, dude.
It's a blunt.
Oh, never mind.
Mr. Valentino, how are you tonight, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you so much. How are we doing, yeah?
We're doing pretty well.
Got out there a little bit.
I felt bad that I missed last week. I was dealing with some issues. For our listeners who may not know, it came to our attention on my wife's birthday back on March 1st that we are expecting our first child together. So I'm very happy about that one.
Hell
Let's
yeah,
go.
congratulations,
Let's
man.
go.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go.
We have a soundboard noise for that one?
But as always, welcome again to the Lap Down. We'd like to thank our and the Blood World. We'd like to thank our and the Blood World and Will, who pops in from time to time for writing our intro song and outro song. Or, I'm sorry, I keep doing that. It's the Alkali
Yeah, I was
Project.
gonna
The
say it's
band
the
is the
band.
Alkali Project.
Yep.
Their album is The Blood World. Please check that out on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or wherever you get your music. Well, gentlemen, we had one race-filled weekend over the course of Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. First off on the list, I believe it was Saturday, they had the F1 race in Saudi Arabia that saw Max Verstappen win his ninth F1 race in a row for Team Red Bull, and it was his 19th out of his last 20 races that he has won. So just absolute total domination there from Max Verstappen.
Absolute ridiculousness.
Yeah, but the
I'm going
big
to set him up
story
for a
that
little bit of history next weekend.
and
No
what would
driver's been
that be?
able to, no driver, if I'm not mistaken, no driver's ever been able to complete three perfect weekends in a row, including the race win, fastest lap point, and leading every lap. But Max Verstappen has now done that in the last two events, meaning that if he's able to lead from pole and win every or lead every lap of the race, he could be the first driver in history to do it 3 weeks in a row.
And also set the record at the most wins in a row at 10.
Did he not have? I thought he had more than 10 last year in a row.
Nope.
No,
He
I
had
think
nine.
Okay, he had nine. In fact, I had
Carlos
nine.
Sainz had a win in there somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, and Sergio had a couple wins in the early part.
But perfect segue there. Speaking of Carlos Sainz and Team Ferrari, Carlos came down with appendicitis just 24 hours before the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. And so Team Ferrari turned to 18-year-old Ollie Bearman, who made his debut in F1 and came home with a seventh place finish, which is no small feat, especially with it being your very first F1 race. Could he, starting with Jamie, could he possibly be Ferrari's next big time driver?
I mean, I definitely think he can be. Obviously, he's got the trust in Ferrari to step in on less than 24-hour notice, especially at a track that, from what I was reading in on him, he's not very familiar with the Saudi Arabia circuit. He was practicing for the Formula 2 series and got the call with like I think it was like 22 hours before race day. And he had to make the trip over and get fitted in the seat and didn't get a chance to practice or anything like that. So the fact that he was able to come home with a seventh place finish just shows the sheer talent that this kid has. I mean, you can say 18 years old, he's a man or whatever, but in my eyes, he's still a kid. But it's just ridiculous. Like, this kid comes out and just puts on a solid performance, doesn't get overwhelmed by the moment, doesn't get overwhelmed by the power of the car or anything like that. So very impressive for Ollie Bearman.
Do you happen to know where he started on Saturday in the race? Like, what position?
With driver change, you started last.
Okay, so out of 20-something cars, he started last and drove his way up to 7th. That is an incredible drive in your debut.
For sure.
20 cars, exactly.
Yeah, so he picked up 13 spots in his very first race, and if I'm not mistaken, they do place points for, like, the first 10 finishing spots, right?
Actually, yep. He did get a chance to qualify the car, so he actually started in 11th, I believe.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, okay. His name is listed on the qualifying results, BEA as opposed to signs.
Okay, so still qualifying just outside the top 10 with no practice.
Yeah, made it. I think it was the first car out of making it to Q3.
Look at the kiddies. Sorry, those who are in the podcast, I'm looking at Greg's camera, and he's got two cats and a dog that just doesn't seem to care that there's cats around. Kind of mind-boggling to me.
Yep.
Going back to what you said, though, about whether or not this could be Ferrari's next driver, the only question mark I would have to that is that Ferrari's pipeline is obviously looking very stacked for the upcoming years, between Lewis Hamilton coming into the team for 2025, and then they've obviously got Charles Leclerc, who they've built up over the last several years to be kind of their current driver of the future. So between those two, unless Ferrari loses confidence in one of those two, an opening might be a few years away.
What's their age ranges?
Let me see.
Yeah, I forgot that Lewis Hamilton was going to Ferrari next year. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah,
that makes for a pretty stacked lineup there.
I'm wondering what their age ranges are, because, like I said, the kid's only 18. So usually,
he could definitely end up taking over
their debuts in the F1 series until they're at least in their mid 20s.
Yeah. Well, Lewis Hamilton's getting up there, and he probably don't have much longer left.
Okay, Leclerc is 26, and Lewis Hamilton is 39. So Lewis Hamilton does not have very much longer, so could be a potential landing spot for him when Lewis retires, assuming that Lewis runs like 1 to 2 more years.
Good person to learn under, though.
Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Ben, what are your thoughts on Ollie Bearman? I don't know if you watch F1 that much or not.
My thoughts, I mean, I don't watch F1 too much, but to like you said, drive up from the back to go all the way to the front, and obviously an F1 race is very hard to pass. And it looked like Saudi Arabia has some really tight turns, and obviously too wide racing isn't you're not going to want to drive it too wide into a corner, because it looked like it has pretty tight corners. But I mean, coming from the back to end up in 7th place as a rookie, and you know, obviously his first start is unbelievable. That is unbelievable, and I just hope for the best. I wish him the best, and I'll be watching, man. That'd be neat to watch him just finish rookie of the year and see where it goes.
Yeah. Now, do you think, since he, you know, did so well in his debut, could this be an opportunity for him to maybe land maybe one or two more races this year for maybe a driver who might have to sit out a race or whatnot? Like, do you think another team looks at him and be like, I want that kid in the car for this race?
It's one of those things, like, yes, he put on a very impressive performance, but the thing with F1 is, like, those drivers don't miss races. Like, it took appendicitis for this guy to miss a race. So if drivers are healthy and things like that, I don't see them making any changes, which unfortunately I don't think we'll see him back in another F1 race. But because, again, he's still very much a part of the F2 series, which is kind of like their version of the Xfinity series for NASCAR. So that's where I'm going to be keeping tabs on him, just seeing how he's performing in the Formula 2 series, and see where that goes. But usually with F1, you don't very very rarely do you see driver swaps or anything like that, because it takes a lot for those guys to miss a race.
One final question regarding F1. I've listened to, you know, all my regular podcasts this week, and they've kind of touched on F1 a little bit. And with Verstappen winning, you know, yet again by such a, you know, a large margin, I think we're, what, two, maybe three races into the season. Is the F1 season already over? Does Max Verstappen have it locked up already?
I mean, it's kind of like the Roman Reigns effect from WWE. You got to acknowledge him as your champion until something catastrophic happens. Verstappen is just on a different levels above everybody. Driver skill, car performance, they just got everything humming. And you may get a winner here or there, like Lewis Hamilton may reprise some of his youth and steal a win. Maybe Carlos will get a win, but it's Verstappen's show. He's the aforementioned tribal chief of Formula One at this point. So Verstappen until proven otherwise.
He also earned max points in the Australian Grand Prix last year, which happens to be the next race on the circuit is Australia. So just another point towards his potential three-peat there.
Switching gears, dude's so talented. It's scary. Yep.
Yeah, he is. That, and, you know, Red Bull has really, really become, like, their own right now. Like, they are, like, the team in Formula One right now.
I remember a few years ago, didn't he turn a few laps at Charlotte? Like, at the Roval?
I think you're thinking of Joseph Newgarden.
Or Newgarden, but I tell you, man, yeah, I haven't seen an F1 in person. Those things are freaking insane. I love them. But yeah, dude, Verstappen show all day long. It's been a Verstappen show is what I've been seeing.
Well, switching gears a little bit, we're going to come back to America with an IndyCar. Yep, IndyCar opened their season on Sunday at St. Pete. Very, very good race. A lot cleaner than last year. I don't know if you guys watched it last year. They had that massive pile up on like lap one where like cars were literally jumping over other cars. But it came down to some good strategy. But Team Penske absolutely dominated the IndyCar race on Sunday. Joseph Newgarden, who Ryan just mentioned, claimed his third win at St. Pete. And three of the top four finishing spots were Team Penske cars. Now, we'll get your guys' thoughts, but I'm going to add in this question. Considering their recent success with Newgarden winning the championship for IndyCar last year, Ryan Blaney winning the Cup Series championship last year, Joey Logano winning the Cup Series championship the year before, could Team Penske really be hitting like their big stride right now?
That's a good question. It's when we're talking about championships, I would say they've had a good run so far. It's very hard to repeat in any series as back-to-back champions. So the fact that Logano won the championship, and then the very next year Ryan Blaney got it. That's almost unheard of outside of like the old school, the old, like the, if we're talking about like the old school point system, then yes, they would have more of a shot. Thinking back with like the Jimmy Johnsons, the Jeff Gordons, all of them, but with the, especially in NASCAR with the chase setup and how everything's orchestrated, it makes it to where it's very hard for one team to have domination in back-to-back years. So that feat in itself is impressive. But when it comes to this race, I gotta say, I was surprised because a guy who I was not necessarily bought into in IndyCar, Will Power. Love the driver, love the passion that he has, but I thought his better days were behind him. And he still managed to come in and get a fourth place finish in the race. And then one of the rookie watches that that our friend John posted on the SportsPad website, Scott McLaughlin, very impressive. Coming home with a third place finish for Penske as well.
What did I miss, guys? Sorry about that.
Right now, we're just getting into the IndyCar race. How Penske claimed three of the top four positions at the end, and Joseph Newgarden winning his third, winning for the third time at St. Petersburg.
Ben, if you caught any of the IndyCar race on Sunday, what were some of your thoughts and opinions on it?
A lot of aggressive driving.
I didn't catch any of it. I was working. I listened to the NASCAR race. That's about it.
Valentino, what about you?
Yeah, it was very aggressive. Congratulations to Newgarden. Like I said, I got it wrong earlier. Thank you, Ryan, for correcting me on that. It was pretty cool to see him turning laps at the Roval, and it's also pretty cool to see him, you know, pretty much dominate the day at St. Pete. Obviously, like Jamie was saying, Will Power, he's been in the game for a while, and he's like pretty much an OG around the garage area. I think he just has a style and a persona that, you know, none of the other drivers have, and most of the young drivers look up to. Will Power, he's always going to be, you know, there for the win. You know what I'm saying? I'm starting to fall in love with IndyCar series, especially when they get around that Indy 500, you know, obviously. But I'm starting to fall in love with the IndyCar series and just the different drivers, different personalities in the series. It's like NASCAR, or even, I don't know how they line up, but they're like NASCAR with the different drivers, different personalities, and pretty much similar teams.
Yeah, and just to go along with that, like, I got into IndyCar about 4 or 5 years ago, back when James Hinchcliffe took over for Danica Patrick. In the number 10
GoDaddy. That was almost 15 years ago, almost.
Yeah,
was
that's it? Been a while.
Holy smokes. All right.
Remember, 4 years ago was the pandemic.
I forgot about that. Time's going by.
Four years ago this coming weekend would be the 4 year anniversary of the lockdown beginning.
Sheesh.
Because Phoenix was our last race before the pandemic back then.
So, John decided to put it on and have me watch it with him. And coincidentally, it was the first race that James Hinchcliffe took over for Danica Patrick. And during pre-race, my man comes out in a long hair black wig, dressed up as Danica Patrick for driver intro. So he made me laugh and instantly made a fan out of me. And then once he retired, I switched over to just kind of sit and just enjoy IndyCar, rooted for Jimmy Johnson when he was racing with them. But I went to the Indy 500 and saw Marcus Ericsson win that race. And I told John, I was like, going into that race, I was like, whoever wins this race, that's who's going to be my next favorite driver for IndyCar. So Marcus Ericsson is now my new favorite driver.
Where is he racing this year, by the way? Which team is he at this year?
Wait, who?
Ericsson. Is he still at Ganassi or no?
No, he's not with Ganassi, which is disappointing. Say, I didn't think he was. I knew there were
a bunch of drivers that changed over at Ganassi, but typically when you win the Indy 500, you typically get a contract extension.
Yeah, he is.
My favorite driver is Cottle Award.
He's racing for Andretti.
Yeah, he's
in the 28 for Andretti.
What were your thoughts on the St. Pete race?
It was way better race than the NASCAR race. I'm sorry.
I don't know if it was better.
Yeah. But the cup race was a snooze fest.
I don't know what race you were watching.
Trying to describe the IndyCar race without mentioning the word fuel saving.
I think he was over on the Kentucky Derby or something.
No, what were your feelings about the IndyCar race on Sunday?
Did you say Tino? You kind of cut out there.
Ryan.
Oh, Ryan.
There was definitely a lot of fuel saving. That was kind of the biggest takeaway I had from that race, is that it feels like, and from everything I've heard from interviews after the race and stuff, it seems like pretty much the name of the game was saving fuel. And honestly, these the cars and the engines are relatively unchanged, especially the engines, since like, going back to what, 2018 or something like that,
Engines haven't run changed since 2012.
So yeah, so they're running the same engine package since 2012, and they've run St. Petersburg each of those years. It's almost like the drivers and the, more importantly, the teams and engineers have kind of figured out exactly how to hit as close to that number. And I don't know the last time they changed the lap count at St. Petersburg, but it feels like maybe that might be needed to try and shake up the way that they save the fuel, or how to save exactly the right amount of fuel, because at this point it almost seems like they've got it down to a science to try and make it right to the end. Or just change the engines, but that's a lot more expensive than just changing the lap count of a race.
Well, I'm going to present one more question before we go into our main focus. One by one, starting with Jamie, if you have heard about it, what are your thoughts on Roger Penske trying to introduce a charter system to the IndyCar series?
I honestly don't know how I feel about it. I feel like there's nothing wrong with the system that they have right now, and I like the mindset, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But then again, he's always trying to look to figure out ways how to bring more money into the sport, and the charter system is a way to bring more money into the sport. But I don't think it's the right move for IndyCar just yet. I think their growth year over year is getting better as a sport. More and more people, especially with how frequent now drivers are crossing over and from one sport to another, and now with when was Tony Stewart's double? Because he was the most recent one, right?
Most recent was Kurt Busch in 2014.
2014. 2013 is when he ran the practice section there. But...
Yeah.
Tony
Stewart's, I think, was what,
02? 01.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're looking at like at least every 10 years a NASCAR driver decides that to try and do the double. I would like to see it on the reverse side every once in a while, just to see if someone like Scott Dixon or somebody like that could pull the double and go from IndyCar to the Cup and race at Charlotte.
I think that would
expand. 1100.
Didn't Danica Patrick's ex do it? Stenhouse or whatever his name is.
Stenhouse never went and ran the Indy 500.
Well, one of the guys. I lied.
Guys, the last one to do it was Jimmy Johnson in 2022.
Well, I said besides Jimmy
Johnson.
Did he
run both races?
Yeah, he ran both races.
No, he didn't run both races.
He ran the 84 in 2022.
Yeah, but was he at Indy? I didn't think he was at Indy last year.
Not last year, 2022.
Peace.
Last year was 2023, not 2022.
Okay, let me look it up real quick.
I think...
While we're waiting on that, Ben, what's your thoughts on the charter system coming into IndyCar?
I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with how it works for them. If it's whatever is not broken, I'll fix it.
Hey, Valentino.
Yeah. First of all, from what I'm reading, it says that that Roger Penske is wanting to at least make do $20 million as like a start off investment. And Michael Andretti, the owner, obviously, he's the owner of Andretti Global. You know, he's part owner of Andretti. He said that you'd have to have five times that number to even do what they want to do. And he says, don't take our money. You know, like Roger Penske he bought the series. He owns the series, doesn't he?
Yeah, he bought the series like, back in late 2019, early 2020. Yeah,
during the epidemic. So they're saying, why take their money and why not sell the series? You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I don't know. I think that's a good valid point there because he owns the series, so why not sell the series and then invest into the system that he wants? If he wants it that bad.
So I also just looked into it. Kurt Busch is the most recent one outside Kyle Larson.
Yeah, Cody Ware was supposed to do it back in, I think it was 2021 or 2022. Cody Ware was supposed to do it, but sponsorship fell through on the IndyCar side.
I was there when Kurt Busch landed in the helicopter in the infield and just like walked over to his car. I just can't imagine being a driver and just like driving 500 miles on one of the most enduring races, get in a helicopter or in a plane, fly over, get in a helicopter, fly over to the lawn, get in your car and go another 600 miles. Just outrageous.
You want to know a fun stat? I'll take over Greg Farmer's fun fact of the day. Robbie Gordon attempted to do the double five times. It didn't always pan out, but he attempted it five times.
Did he ever qualify for both races?
My research does not show that.
Okay, because I know the chances that back then there was a chance that you could miss out on one or the other pretty easily, as opposed to nowadays where, like, for example, we know for sure Kyle Larson will be in the Coke 600, so we don't have to worry about that one. But obviously, he could end up missing out on the Indy 500.
But yeah, Robbie Gordon first attempted in 1997 and qualified for both races, but the Indy 500 was postponed by rain and was eventually completed 2 days later.
All right.
Then he tried it again in 2000, 2002, 2003, and 2004.
Okay. Do you guys know who the only driver is to actually complete both races?
It never said that he actually completed them. It just said attempted.
Well, you know, who actually
did Busch that finished on the lead lap for both races.
I think Kurt Busch wrecked out, didn't he?
No,
I think so.
He wrecked out the 600. He finished the entire 500. He finished sixth.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, you know a driver
the top 10 in the 500.
Do we know a driver who finished both races?
Yeah, Tony Stewart.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. You said that. My apologies.
I'm say he finished both, but did he win the only lap in both?
Mr. Tony, the so boss. Kurt Busch.
Kurt Busch finished sixth at Indy. And then finished sixth place at Charlotte as well.
If I'm not mistaken. If I'm not mistaken, the race that Kurt Busch wrecked out on, Juan Pablo Montoya won it.
No,
when
that
Kurt
was
Busch did a double duty.
No, 2014 was Alexander Rossi.
Was it? Oh,
Kurt no, Busch. 2016 was Rossi.
It was a Montoya.
2014 was Elio. Elio and somebody in a photo finish. Ryan Hunter Ray.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was Hunter Ray and Elio in a photo finish.
So Montoya won it the next year or
yeah, Juan Pablo won it in 15 for Ganassi.
Okay. I was really happy.
No,
yeah, 15 was his Penske one, earlier was his Ganassi.
No, Ryan Hunter Ray won it.
I was really happy for Juan Pablo that day, man. You go from hitting a jet dryer to winning the 500.
He's a two-time Indy 500 winner.
I love him, man. He's a good guy, too.
But going back to the original question, though, about the IndyCar charters, and this kind of also goes back to the double conversation. It's a lot harder for a driver like, say, a Scott Dixon or a Scott McLaughlin to go and attempt both races because they would need to find a seat at one of the either 36 chartered cars or try and find a team that doesn't have a charter that's willing to have them attempt to qualify their way in, which obviously we don't have a full field every year for every single race, but it's a lot harder to take a chance on someone who's a complete rookie if you either don't have a charter and where I think right now 34 of the 36 charter cars are filled with a full-time driver. I think the only two part-timers are the 15 at Rick Ware and the 16 over at Colleague, I think are the only rotational cars that have charters.
Well, I mean, they could always go a route kind of like what 2311 is doing with Kobayashi Racing. So you have those teams that have that third car or that fourth car that may just take a shot just to draw some extra publicity and get some extra dollars with like a Scott Dixon NASCAR shirt and things like that.
Yeah, but also the potential that they may have to have somebody else qualify that car, which means that IndyCar star would have to start tail into the field because of the driver swap, because where they're racing in Indy and depending on what time they're qualifying for the Coke 600 could be tough to qualify for one and then make it back in time. Right? If I'm not mistaken. But at least on the exhaustion level.
It is tough, but it also helps that they qualify for the Indy 500 like a week in advance.
Yeah, it's not like they have to qualify for both on the same day, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just the same thing that they do with the double. They qualify, and then they fly over to Indy, and then they get, like, 5 hours of sleep, and then they do the Indy 500 and get a nice little power nap on the helicopter.
I honestly feel very excited for what NASCAR is showcasing, like, the driver they're sending, because I honestly feel like Kyle Larson could be the second driver to actually finish both races. And he can end up maybe even getting a top 10 in the 600. You know, and maybe even that'd be cool to see him get a top 10 in the 500. It'd be the first driver to get a top 10 in both races. That would be fantastic. I'd just love to see it.
Didn't we just talk about Kurt Busch finishing sixth in both races in 2014?
He did not finish the cup race. He got an engine issue about halfway through.
Yeah, I remember. He was in the...
Someone said that Kurt Busch was sixth.
Kurt
Busch
was in what car was he in then?
He would have been in the
41.
Stewart Haas.
Yeah.
I don't think you finished the race that day.
On that note, we're going to...
His blown engine, Kurt Busch double ends with blown engine and Coke 600. A lap 271 out of 400.
So I said about halfway, so I was not off by much.
Damn, that is pretty cool to see him, though, win an Indy 500 or six an Indy 500. That's pretty cool. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, getting sixth, though.
But I mean, imagine if. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, you're good. We're going to shift our focus to the main topic tonight. Domination in the desert. NASCAR held the Cup Series and Xfinity Series races at Phoenix this past weekend. Chandler Smith got his second career win in the Xfinity Series race on Saturday after a failed rear tire from Justin Allgaier with about four to go in the Xfinity Series race. Everyone thought that he was on cruise control to win, and he decided to pull his best Dale Earnhardt and blow a tire with about four to go and spun out and hit the wall. But we'll touch on Xfinity in a few minutes. But in the Cup race, Denny Hamlin started on the pole. Ty Gibbs got out to an early lead. When it was all said and done after 312 laps, Toyota had led all but 14 laps.
298 of 312.
Todd Gilliland led the other 14 laps when he stayed out trying to play pit strategy. A stat that all four Joe Gibbs drivers led 50 or more laps, which is the first ever team to accomplish that feat in Cup Series history. We all know that they did a tire test / package test back in December. Everybody said that the Toyotas came out just blowing everybody away in that test. And we definitely saw that on Sunday. Christopher Bell ended up getting the win and notching his spot in the playoffs very early in the season. So with that being said, it looks like Jamie's off screen. So we'll start with Ben this time. No, Ben's at the drive-thru. So we'll start with Valentino. In your opinion, did you think that the short track package that they introduced this weekend made a difference, or was it just being Phoenix?
Oh, Phoenix, yeah. This is definitely just Phoenix being Phoenix, you know. But like you said, you did touch base on that Toyota, kind of blew everybody away with the tire test. They came back and pretty much just wiped the floor this weekend with all the competition, especially Joe Gibbs. But I did want to say that I did have something on my mind. Right here. Toyota only led 15 laps before the start of the Phoenix race. Can you believe that? And they end up leading almost every single lap at this race. So that's fantastic for Toyota and their new body style this year, just kind of like different than everybody else's. It just seems like aerodynamic is just on their side. Who knows?
Add context on that, you said they had only led 15 laps. That's they had only led 15 laps at Phoenix with the next gen car, and that's four races total, not counting this one, that they had only led 15 total laps. And if I'm not mistaken, Valentino, you said, I believe it was either last week or week before, that you said before Richmond, Toyota was going to have a win.
I don't remember that, but I would like to go back and read. Yeah, it might have been Jamie. That he was saying.
Jamie said that? Okay. Well, Jamie, what are your thoughts on the short track package that we saw on Sunday? And do you think anything will ever change at Phoenix as far as racing product, or will it always be the same?
I think it's always going to be the same. To be honest, when it comes to the short track package, I didn't really notice a difference. And I've seen some driver interviews, like Chase Elliott, as an example. They asked him that question. He even openly said, honestly, I forgot that they even attempted to change anything. He's like, I didn't even know that they did change anything until everyone started talking about it afterwards. So the fact that drivers didn't feel a difference, didn't really feel any type of change, doesn't exactly give me hope for short track racing for this year. It's one of those things that obviously they went out for the tire testing, and I think that gave them an advantage just to understand the package a little bit more, to understand how the tires affect, how everything plays a role with that track. But going into that, I did say that Toyota was, I was expecting Richmond to be the race that they got a win at. So they did it two races earlier. And I don't know. No, I'm miscounting. My math isn't that good. Anyways, they definitely got a dub a lot quicker than I expected them to get a dub. And they did it in very impressive fashion, just through practice speeds and then qualifying. Just looking at how in the initial practice, all eight were in the top 17. All eight Toyotas were in the top 17 of the field. And there were some that were like right on top of each other in speed. So I knew that Sunday was going to be a Toyota fest.
You could say it was a Toyota-thon.
It was a Toyota-thon.
Oh my God.
But
one thing I wanted to bring up, joke in there somewhere.
I wanted to bring up, though, what I missed it because I was too busy talking with Ryan when it went down. The Denny Hamlin spin. What happened with that?
You weren't there with me when that happened, were you?
I was talking with you, or I was talking with somebody else on the phone.
Yeah, I think you were off doing something else, because I was in stage three when that happened. I know, because it tanked my fantasy lineup, which was at the time perfect. A perfect 280.
I'm watching the restart right. I'm watching it right now.
Messed mine up a little bit too, because I had Hamlin.
Yeah, I had a perfect 280 though. I was number one globally at in the fantasy game at that point.
Looks to me like he just got loose.
Knocked me out.
So he just got loose.
That looks to me like he just got loose. Yeah,
It was off the nose of somebody else. I don't remember whose car that was behind him.
Well, because I just watched the restart and there was nobody behind him. He kind of just. Maybe he just, oh no, I'm sorry. He like got hit up of the 45 car, just ran right up into the side of him, trying to get up.
Yeah, they're all side right on top of each other because it was a restart.
Yeah, he was trying to side draft him and get up in the corner, and he just over.
Reddick.
Yeah. Reddick was a little lower than he was.
It was very much a Thomas Cup Series type move.
Yeah. You ruined my day, Tyler Reddick. You ruined my day.
He's a little lower than he expected. He misjudged it.
But yeah, Hamlin, Reddick, and then the next three behind them were Blaney, Byron, and Elliott, which were my five drivers.
Yeah, Elliott, man. Holy moly.
Elliott, he just dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I was so upset about that.
Once he and Byron lost that track position, they couldn't get it back.
Yeah, it seems like Hendrick just fell back.
But again, it was those Toyotas, they were just carving up the field. Like, I was looking at Martin Truex Jr. just bobbing and weaving his way with the fresh tires.
And say he hit an extra time and still made it back up into the top 10.
Yeah.
We're going to need that Toyota set up in the Hendrick garage next year. But hey, it always seems like Hendrick dominates the second race. So we'll see what happens with Phoenix 2.
Yep. Go ahead, Greg.
Sorry.
Oh, my thoughts on Sunday, to be very honest, I didn't really care for it. I personally thought it was a snooze fest. I knew Toyotas are going to be fast, especially with the... I actually thought the... Oh, I'm muted. Hello? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I've been able to hear you just fine.
Well, my thoughts on the race, honestly, is how impressive, despite the Toyotas having shown, how impressive the Hendrick guys were until the end of the race. Chase Elliott and Alex Bowman specifically. They were
running. Byron hung around there inside the top five for a good portion of the race, too.
Those three, Kyle Larson was struggling, but it was, I honestly had my eyes on the Chase, the Hendrick boys, because they were probably the fastest ones other than Toyotas. Other than that, it was a snooze fest.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a snooze fest. There was definitely a lot of action on the track. The restarts were crazy as usual. And then even amongst the Toyotas, like watching Denny Hamlin, Tyler Reddick, Ty Gibbs battling it out, and then the surgeons of Christopher Bell just eating up time. It was an interesting race.
Well, and then there was the conversation coming down the end of the race with all the people on different strategies, not knowing who or where someone may or may not run out of fuel and or blow a tire, like what we saw in the Xfinity race. We had we obviously had Truex, who was on 16 lap older tires than some of the leaders, and you had guys like Buescher, Briscoe, and McDowell, who were on 8 lap older tires than the rest of the field. So
it seemed like at the end of tires didn't really make a difference, because freaking Hendrick threw on some brand new tires at the end and they got dropped to the back. It was like crazy. I thought they were going to move up.
Tire goes out on you at the wrong time.
I am going to touch on Christopher Bell's insane 18th to first in like 2 laps or something like that. That was insane.
Oh, was it? Yeah. That was crazy for the win.
They touched on it. They said it was like over the course of the last 90 laps, he went from like 20th to first or something like that.
It was within like 5 laps he was in first, though.
Oh yeah, he was definitely the class of the field.
Go ahead, Ben.
I've never been a fan of that track. I really don't like it.
Okay. I agree.
Can we give our props out to Ty Gibbs? He's been doing great this year.
As much as I hate Ty Gibbs, I kind of have to agree with that.
So yep. He did really good this race.
Yeah, for sure.
He's gonna get his first career win this year, and I think it's gonna come sooner rather than later.
He almost had it this weekend.
That win that Jamie was predicting.
They were touching on one thing though during the race. I don't know if y'all saw it. Like, he was kind of getting smart mouthy with his crew chief. Like, he was saying yeah, like getting kind of smart mouthy with him. I don't know if he was just frustrated because he was leading and he dropped back a little bit. I'm not sure, but he got a third place finish, so I'm so happy with Ty Gibbs. He's doing well this year. He has the equipment.
Yeah, he's still a kid though. He gets frustrated, and we got to remember he's still a kid. He's still gonna respond in some ways that a kid would.
Oh yeah, for sure.
He's literally at my age.
Yeah, but yeah, I think overall it was a good week for Toyota, a good run for Gibbs. But most of all, we were very harsh on him the past couple weeks. Well, since the NASCAR season started, so very good for Christopher Bell to take that pressure and turn it into a win in a convincing fashion. It wasn't like a fluke thing. So there is hope within JGR that the future could be Christopher Bell, and just see if he can just continue with this momentum and kind of use his leader, trying to use it to develop some leadership qualities to lead JGR into the future once MTJ and Denny decide to leave.
I'm going to ask you guys a question before we go into our next topic. Starting with Jamie, do you really consider Phoenix as a short track? And was this really a good place to test that short track package?
I don't really consider Phoenix as a short track. Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, but Phoenix is like a mile and a half.
It's 1 mile.
1 mile.
Yeah.
They consider New Hampshire
a short track for adults and
minors. No, they don't. They consider it an intermediate. They call it an intermediate.
Oh, they do. When did they do that? Because all last I knew they had
Three pure short tracks, which are Bristol, Richmond, and Martinsville. Those are the ones that NASCAR classifies when they classify, like, for example, a few years ago when Martin Truex Jr. hadn't won on a short track, even though Dover was his first career win at a 1 mile oval there.
Dover's not a short track. Dover's an intermediate. Anything but
Dover's
over
a 1 mile track, the same as Phoenix or New Hampshire. So you can't call Dover an intermediate, but then try and argue that New Hampshire's a short track.
The monster mile, baby.
I might be going to Dover, Ben. I'll see you there.
Hey, you'll be seeing me there too, Tyler. But I don't consider Phoenix a short track. Now,
even with though a lot of people do
package routes and things like that, it's going to be very interesting to see how it looks and how it feels on an actual short track like Bristol. And
They are not running this package at Bristol. The next time they run this package is Richmond. They're running the intermediate package at Bristol.
Which I'm kind of excited about.
Not gonna lie.
I don't know why they wouldn't run it at Bristol.
Bristol's a very high speed track, though.
Which is all the more reason to run the same package.
Bristol is maybe a short track, but it actually races like an intermediate.
Yep.
It's as fast as an intermediate. You're going like a...
I don't consider it a short track. I consider it like a Dover type of track, intermediate.
I think it's the fastest mile in the world, isn't it?
Which one?
Dover's fastest mile in the world, probably.
I'll say Dover. Yeah, Dover's okay. Pretty fast. That turn four, you do alive. That turn four comes up quick.
I got to go there one day. I'll probably make it there next year.
That's all you're thinking of. It's the world's fastest half mile.
Valentino, what are your thoughts about Phoenix being considered a short track?
I definitely, when it comes to size, obviously you want to call it a short track, but it doesn't race like a short track. Well, like people can fan out from 6 wide or 7 wide. Oh, you can go as far wide as you want. You can put 2 trains between you on the front stretch there.
I think the reason why they consider it a short track is because of the way it's shaped.
Oh, yeah.
It's oddly shaped. And there's one long turn.
Well, you could also say the same thing about oddly shaped racetracks. You could say the same about Dover, or not Dover, Darlington. I mean, Darlington's got an odd shape to it.
Darlington's actually considered a speedway.
1.36 mile speedway.
Yeah, Darlington was originally called a super speedway.
Yeah, it is.
Charlotte.
Yeah.
Charlotte was called a super speedway too when they first built it.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte should be.
I think
Texas. They need to call about Texas.
Like you said, I don't think you consider this. I don't know if you could consider this a short track because of how it races, but I would say it's an intermediate. But obviously, you got to run a short track package because of the size.
I say the reason I say
I don't think it's a short track, but it races like a short track. That's why they consider it. Because of how tight the corners are and how slow the corners are.
Well, if you ever like raced it, you know, you can fan out 5-6 wide. You can make moves in a short track. It's really hard to get it. You got to bump people out the way. Yeah. You got to work your way through. Here, you can just get on the front stretch and just shoot the middle or stay up high and just shoot around them. Get around.
It is a wide short track, but I don't think the track being wide is what makes it not a short track.
I think it's just the way it races. Well, obviously the size is what makes it a short track, but the way it races, it's like an intermediate all day. I mean, we've raced there, Ryan. I mean, it's just fast. It's so much you can do. There's so many moves you can make on a short track. There's not many moves you can make.
Actually, you want to know something funny? Did you know that like front, you know how the dog leg right there on the back stretch, on the old back stretch?
Yeah.
The front stretch now, they're actually thinking about banning the move to go down to the thing. They're thinking about making it like you cross that line, you get penalized.
I hope not, because that's good racing.
Well, and it just gives them another line for people to potentially end up shoving people below that leads to potential ball and strike penalties. Because, I mean, think about how many times we're debating whether or not someone dove below the WO line at Daytona, or whether they got shoved down there, and where the penalty should be going, and how often we are questioning if NASCAR got the right call. Do we want to put more of those calls in their hands?
That's actually a thing.
Yeah.
That's actually been a thing that's been getting traction the last couple of years since they reconfigured.
How about what do you think, Greg?
I don't think it's a short track at all. It, to me, a short track is 3/4 of a mile or less. So I do not think that this was a good test for the short track package. Now, granted, I know Bristol is a high speed short track, but they really need to try this short track package at Bristol just to see how it would go. But I'm in agreement with drivers like Larson and Hamlin and all the other guys who've been talking over the last couple days about introducing more horsepower, especially at Phoenix. Just really to shut us fans up that have been calling for more horsepower, just to see if it would work.
It doesn't hurt to try. You know, the manufacturer, like I said, sorry, guys, but. I add on to that. It's literally the manufacturers said it would cost the thing to take it from 670 to 800 to 1,000.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a quote from Kyle Larson saying that they could have it at 1,000 horsepower for either Bristol or Coda this within a week or so.
Uh-huh.
And the engine builds.
If NASCAR would allow it, that the teams could have 1,000 horsepower engines ready for like Bristol or Coda. I mean, I know Coda's not necessarily the race we're thinking about for horsepower being a change, but maybe it could help fix the road course package too.
I think high horsepower, high downforce for the Coda would actually make the racing better on the road courses.
Yeah, but in all honesty, though, I think the true test on this package is going to come at
Martinsville.
I mean, Richmond's okay, but Martinsville, yes, will be like the real true test of this short track package to see how it fares.
Well, Martinsville hasn't been terrible in the next gen.
I beg to differ. I think it's the short track that's been hurt the worst by the next gen. Package or by the next gen car.
Excellent. Well, if you think about it, I would honestly say if they can get rid of the shifting at Martinsville, I think it'll be a little bit better. But yeah, I agree with more power. I think the power, about my personal opinion on the power, is they actually have the throttle response turned way down. It's not as not as punchy as old NASCARs are, like where you spin the tires. It's so hard to spin the tires in these next gen cars. Whereas the older cars,
Yeah, they turned the throttle body way down. That's why. That's part of the reason why. You can. I've seen more wheel spin in Xfinity, and they had 670 horsepower as well.
I guess we'll just have to see when we get to Martinsville. All right, we're going to go personally... into...
Oh, go ahead,
Tyler.
Go ahead. I was like, get rid of the diffuser. Get rid of the diffuser. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I want to say, when people are talking about like getting rid of the new parts off the next-gen car, I want to know what problem would the diffuser really fix if you do just take that right off?
Dirty air.
But isn't the whole point of the diffuser to clean up the air and to try and limit the problem of dirty air?
Yeah, it's made it worse. Especially at short tracks.
Well, let's say a slow-speed short track like Martinsville, I don't think air makes much, if any, difference, really.
But yeah. Sorry, Greg, let's move on to the next segment. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, you're good. We're going to move into green flags and black flags from the weekend. So since we covered multiple things tonight, our green flags and black flags can be from any racing series, whether it be F1, IndyCar, or NASCAR. You know, for our listeners, even the new ones who don't know, green flags is something that we liked, and black flags is something that we didn't like. So, Jamie, why don't you get us started?
Green flag would be for Toyota. Just completely dominating the whole weekend. Xfinity Series Toyotas were running the world. NASCAR Toyotas were running the world. And then to go along with Toyota, my big green flag goes out to Christopher Bell for winning in convincing fashion, not having anything fluky or lucky about it. Nothing up for debate. He earned that win through and through. So hats off to him. My black flag is probably going to be to Chevy. They did not perform well as a team at Phoenix, especially in the Cup Series. Like, you had like Byron and Bowman and Elliott up there for a good part of the time, but then they all just kind of fizzled out and just fell off. Not the best look with this new package. So I think they were severely underprepared when it comes to this new package and how it ran. So Chevy gets the black flag for this week.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and go because I don't want nobody to steal mine. So my green flags, you know, touching on what Jamie said, the Toyota is just absolutely putting on a clinic this weekend. Big green flags to IndyCar, Joseph Newgarden. I like Newgarden. I think he's a great driver. But I give green flag to IndyCar as a whole for putting on a really good race, considering last year where it was pretty much Crash Fest USA. The race played out naturally this year. And we saw a pretty popular win with a pretty popular team. My black flag, and this is the only black flag that I have this week, and it has to go to NASCAR officials for the bullshit caution for Haley Deegan in the Xfinity Series race on Saturday, where she barely got up out of the groove and touched the wall. They were trigger happy on the button, and then it resulted on the ensuing restart a 16 car pileup that involved cars like John Hunter Nemechek and Haley Deegan and not Chandler Smith, Riley Herbst and Ryan Sieg. Just an absolute melee that resulted from just one of the most BS cautions I've ever seen.
And a 17th car just piled in. They're still crashing to this day over there.
Oh, so it's NASCAR ignition 2-1.
Yep. Ben, what are your green flags and black flags?
I'm giving my green flag, like Jamie said, Toyota. And give it to my boy Ty Gibbs. He did good. Black flags. I'm going to have to go with my boy Chase. What happened, dog? What happened? And Hendrick as a whole, they didn't do well either.
I'm going to have to agree with you.
Before we get to Valentino, I'm going to throw in one more green flag. Noah Gregson and Carson Hocevar are absolutely doing fantastic here lately for the teams that they're driving for. Kind of feels like Noah's almost carrying SHR right now. Granted, he kind of faded there at the end of at Phoenix on Sunday, but he was running in the top 10. And I think this is his, I want to say, third top 15 finish. As well as Carson Hocevar, he finished in the top 15 as well. He's really, really putting the pressure on Corey LaJoie over at Spire. But go ahead, Valentino. What are yours?
All right. Thank you so much. My green flag tonight's going to be RFK Racing, because they just struggled in the first three races. Chris Buescher, Daytona, he went 18th. Atlanta, he finished 9th. Las Vegas, 37th. Brad K, he finished 33rd at Daytona, 33rd at Atlanta, 13th at Las Vegas, and finished 4th at Phoenix. So that's definitely my green flag for this week is RFK Racing. Very good little step up from the last 3 weeks. Not very good finishes. Happy for RFK Racing. They got a good finish this week, so that's my green flag. For my black flag, like Ben said, Chase Elliott. Man, it just seems like the team is under a rebuilding stage at this point. They lost their veteran spotter, Denny DeHond, over the season. He went over to Josh Berry's team to be their full-time spotter. And now he has his cousin, Trey Poole, up on the spotter up on the top of the box, you know, spotting for him. Alan Gustafson, he's still crew chief for the 9th season. So they've had their ups and downs. And a lot of people are like trying to blame Alan, but they, you know, you can't blame everybody. It's just, you're not going to win every race. I think Chase Elliott's in his rebuilding stage at this point, and I'm not even sure if he's going to be winning a race anytime soon, but I'm just still going to be his fan no matter what. So,
you were the biggest critic on RFK in most recent weeks, so that's huge that you're giving them a green flag. I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm just happy to see him finishing well this week, and look forward to seeing what they can do over in Bristol.
I'm going to have to give my green flag to Martin Truex Jr. to go from heading a pit with like 40-something to go to finishing inside the top 10. Like I said, those Toyotas in general were stupid fast. And my black flag, I'm going to have to agree with all y'all. Chase Elliott, sorry, bud, but you fell off. I love the guy. He's my favorite driver. But he's struggling. And honestly, I actually agree with a couple of YouTubers that I watch online saying that Chase Elliott's time at Hendrick is actually on thin ice.
Can I bring in one more point before Ryan goes? Another person that I was really thinking about is it's Austin Cindric in the 2 car, how rough he's had so far this season. He's just had a horrible finish last week. Haven't really, really heard his name very often since he won the 500. And I wonder how his ride is, security is over there.
Well, his dad's the CEO of Team Penske, so I think his ride security is pretty solid.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess so. But either way, he's got a job, you know, if he can't get it done in a seat.
If he didn't get the job done, he should be out of the seat.
Say, he was in a very similar position, I think, to a lot of us with Ty Gibbs coming into the season, where it's like, we know they're definitely going to have a ride going forward, but trying to evaluate whether or not they would still have this ride without the last name backing them with the results that they've put up so far. Because obviously, you know, he had his sophomore slump last season. And we were waiting to see what kind of season Ty Gibbs is going to have, and it looks like it very least looks like it's looking about as good as last year, if not better, to start with.
What's your green flags and black flags?
All right, so my green flag is actually going to a driver from Sunday's Indy Next race, the driver who finished second in that race, Jacob Abel. I was actually talking with Nighthawk before we went on the with Ben before we went on the air, and talking about how I raced with him in an event a couple years ago, and I happened to see his name on the entry list for the Indy Next race, and he got a career best finish, a second in that race, so. Yeah, I just wanted to give that green flag shout-out to Jacob Abel over there for Abel Motorsports getting that win, or second place. His fifth podium in his Indy Next career, so wanted to give that one as the green flag, and then trying to think of a different red flag other than the stupid yellow flag that led to a red flag in Saturday's Xfinity race. Trying to think of one. Give me a minute. I'd have to say the Denny Hamlin spin because it ruined my fantasy lineup.
I got one because I'm surprised
not often, because it is not often that I have a perfect fantasy roster, number one globally, and then the Denny Hamlin spin killed it.
Yeah, so there was another glaring name that I'm surprised nobody talked about. Are we just going to turn a blind eye that Joey Logano can't get out of his own way? Like my man can qualify on the pole or front row every single freaking week, and then always, I think he, out of all the races, I think he's only completed one of them.
He's got three DNFs in four races, and the other race he finished, I believe, laps down, if I'm not mistaken.
Like that is the biggest of black flags right now.
I'll also mention my green flag, Martin Truex. He's not been doing too bad the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, MTJ is turning around, but yeah, I can't in good faith just let Joey Logano just skate by with what's been going on with him and that team.
Well, I mean, on that same note, I'll go ahead and throw a shot at my favorite driver. Kyle Busch has not been up to his normal snuff. Now, I've been giving him a pretty big pass because I knew Spring Bristol was coming, and his track record at Concrete Bristol, and in particular Spring Bristol, has been pretty good. But yeah, this week, if there is a week for him to bounce back, and if there's going to be a hope for a potential playoff run later in the summer, this is going to be the week where we need to see at least some progress, and it won't be hard to find progress considering how he's run so far this year. I mean, he was mid-30s in both practice and qualifying at Phoenix. Not sure where he ended up finishing at the end of the day. I think it was in the mid-30s.
Who are you talking about?
Kyle Busch.
Oh, yeah, he was like mid-30s.
He was 22nd at the end of the race, but yeah, he started 31st. Yeah, practiced around there too, but say a 22nd place finish for him. It's one of those things that you guys see some speed out of him, and we're going to his best track, and I'm hoping for a bounce back, and I've given him a lot of credit knowing that Spring Bristol was coming, but now it's here pretty much. And am I allowed to lock him in as my pick for the week?
We will get there momentarily. We're going to go into our poll question first, and Jamie brought this up. earlier in a private message. Nobody else knows what the poll question is, but you're about to find out, and we are going to go one by one, and then we can debate about
last.
It very nicely. Starting with Ben, you have Bristol Motor Speedway. You take prime Kyle Busch versus prime Dale Earnhardt in a 10-lap shootout. Who gets the checkered flag?
Dale Earnhardt, honestly.
Give me Earnhardt all day, every day.
Valentino, what do you think?
Oh, I think Dale Earnhardt's winning the race. I mean, he's the intimidator. He's bumping you out the way, and he's the king of bump and run, baby. You know it.
Tyler.
I honestly am Dale Earnhardt all the way right up with everybody.
Ryan.
I am going to go Kyle Busch here, and not just to be different or just because he's my favorite driver. But I actually was talking this exact same question with my dad earlier today. I saw the exact same Facebook post you guys, I'm assuming, saw. But, yeah, I had actually had this exact same conversation with him, and we both said Kyle Busch, so.
Give me some reasons. Give me some reasons. Because
well,
I wanted to debate.
First off, I look at just the track record of Dale Sr. versus the track record of Kyle Busch. Because Dale Sr. was great pretty much everywhere. But if you look at the all-time wins list at Bristol specifically, and that being the venue for this shootout between prime Kyle Busch and prime Dale Earnhardt Sr., I would just give it to the veteran experience and essentially that hometown feel, even though obviously it's not Rowdy's home track, but it certainly is a place that he and Kurt both made their home throughout the 2000s and 2010s. Not to mention, do you remember what Kyle Busch has been blasted about for years at this point, 2008 Richmond? He's willing to move people out the way for wins, just like Dale Sr. was.
And I like that you brought, I looked up career wins at Bristol specifically. Kyle Busch has 8 career wins at Bristol, and Dale Earnhardt has 9.
Okay, Dale Sr. does have 9, okay.
Yep. Now, when
does
it comes
include
to...
include Xfinity and Cup combined, or is that just Cup series?
Just Cup.
Okay.
But the one set that I had to look at, in their career, both respectively, how many times in their career do they qualify outside the top 20? And
okay.
Kyle Busch finished outside the top 20 10 times, and Dale Earnhardt
finished. Or started, because you said qualified.
Finished.
Okay, finish. Okay.
Yeah, finished outside the top 20. Kyle Busch finished 10 times outside the top 20. Dale Earnhardt 6 times.
Okay.
So when we're talking prime versus prime, it's not so much on who gets the job done. It's more about the racing.
Yeah.
And
well, look at the level of competition too.
With the level of competition, but if we were just basing it down to these two.
Yeah.
Kyle Busch is a better people mover than Dale Earnhardt is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change my mind on that.
Well, yeah, and I mean, even looking at some of the other races that maybe are ones that got away from Kyle Busch, I mean, I think back to 2018 Bristol, where he got caught up in someone else's wreck less than 30 seconds into that race. And I mean, sure, it didn't take him completely out of the race, but the damage from that ultimately caused him to take longer on fuel-only stops. That led to him ultimately losing that race, and other, I'm sure if I look back through every single race, you'd see a lot of situations where if it were a 1v1, sure, there wouldn't be 20 other cars to potentially pile up Kyle Busch on lap one.
Right, but like I said, that's why the poll question was the 10-lap shootout. So
yep.
In my opinion, I think it would look very similar to how Kyle Busch and Kurt Busch were beating and banging on each other trying to get to that finish line. And without one of them spinning, I give the edge to Kyle Busch at Bristol.
Yep.
I'm taking the Kyle Busch round as response to the game. Either of them would lift this checkered flag because they would think that totally so much that goes and are tricked in the infield.
Yeah, but I would give Kyle Busch the credit to win the foot race back around. Not to mention, would Kyle give up? Or Dale Sr., honestly, I think they would both accept that challenge to run it, foot race it to the checkered flag.
I can see them run to the start finish line. Kyle Busch looking at Dale Earnhardt being like, I'll rip that mustache right off your face if it means getting to that finish line before you.
Yeah, recreate the Talladega Knights thing, but at Bristol.
Yep.
I still think they should have done something like that when qualifying got rained out at Dirt Bristol that first year.
That would have been funny.
Yeah, watching them sprinting from like the restart zone to the start finish line to set the starting position. Or my original idea was to have them each go try and grab a duck and see whose duck could race across to the line the fastest, since there was so much rain out there where there were probably more ducks than you could find people.
Anybody else got any input on this? Any of y'all want to challenge us on our picks of Kyle Busch over Dale Earnhardt?
They're both hard-headed. I think, honestly, I have to agree with them and say that it's going to be a record deal, but I think they get out of the car and start running towards the finish line like in the movie Talladega Nights.
But, again, it's a 10-lap shootout, and if they're both on the front row, it takes about 10-15 laps before they start hitting the rear of the field. So, between the two of them, who are you picking?
I'm picking Dale Earnhardt, honestly.
And why?
If we're assuming it's a 1v1, they're not going to hit the rear of the field, ever, because they are the field.
If I say the 1v1, in a 1v1 hands down Dale Earnhardt, only because Dale Earnhardt... Well, actually, you know what? That's actually a lot harder to think than now I think about it. I think, honestly, it's come down to a photo finish at the 10-lap shootout.
For sure, that's why we...
The only reason why I chose Earnhardt is because I just don't like Kyle.
Fair enough.
I honestly... Now, you guys are making me second guess. That's actually a really hard decision, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Like, when we say prime Kyle Busch, I'm talking the Kyle Busch who...
You're talking, like, 2015 Kyle Busch?
I'm speaking of is the one that I openly said he just has a very punchable face because of his attitude and his driving style. That's how I feel about Kyle Busch at the time.
2017, where he swept the Bristol races, the only driver to ever sweep all three races in the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And both times he did it, it was at Bristol. Now, if you gave me the same question at most other tracks, I'd probably go and say Dale Earnhardt Sr., but I think the track is what would tip it ever so slightly in Rowdy's favor.
I think they're going to wreck each other on the final lap. That's my thing.
But who crosses first?
They crash out of turn four. They get out of the cars and they race each other like Talladega Nights. And
I'm gonna say this isn't like or the modern day culture. You don't get to add like a C or a D answer. It's either A or B.
And it's not like we can just go ahead and snap our fingers and make this happen as much as we wish we could.
Now, I actually kind of have to say Bristol. If it's Bristol, yeah, I'm gonna have to go to Kyle Busch because Dale Earnhardt was never. He only had like 3 wins at Bristol total.
He had 9, but
yeah, 9.
But I can only really remember one Bristol win being something super special, which was obviously the rattling Terry's cage. I know you obviously had other wins, but that's when you say, like, you know, Dale Earnhardt Bristol wins, that's the only one that comes to mind. Versus with Kyle Busch, I can think of probably, now obviously it's because it's more recent, but I can think of probably 3, 4, 5 Kyle Busch wins off the top of my head.
And he stole the win. He stole the win in 2022.
Well, I wasn't even thinking dirt Bristol. I was thinking concrete Bristol races. But like, I'm thinking, you know, you've got the Kyle and Kyle show from 2018 spring. You've got the 2017 domination show that he was a part of in
2010.
Yeah, 2010, where he swept it. And that's three right there versus only one Dale Sr. win at Bristol that I can think of off the top of my head. Granted, I wasn't alive when Dale Sr. was racing, so.
Kyle Busch got the first win in the Car of Tomorrow at Bristol.
Exactly.
Oh, that is true, we did.
Yep.
That is true, we did.
He got out and said, this car is terrible.
This car sucks.
Yeah.
But Dale Earnhardt Sr.
But again, like, aside from not counting Rattling Terry's Cage, can anyone name one other win of Dale Sr.'s at Bristol? Without Googling it.
Well, rookie year, he won both Bristol races in his rookie year. I just looked at both career wins and, like, career starts and finishes. And Kyle Busch finished and his career cup starts, to be more specific for those who are listening. Kyle Busch has finished in the top 5 15 times. Dale Earnhardt finished in the top 5 20 times.
So they're pretty much even.
They are even, because technically Dale Earnhardt has raced more races at Bristol than Kyle Busch at this point. So, yeah.
Right.
So definitely on track. Kyle Busch is only 5 more top 5s away from tying Dale Earnhardt in that aspect.
Yeah. What about
Kyle Busch's 28th year at the 500, isn't it?
Hmm?
This year was Kyle Busch's 28th year at the 500, wasn't it?
I think it was his 20th year. It was supposed to be his 20th attempt because he attempted it back in 2004, but you have to factor in that he missed the start of the 2015 season with that broken leg, so he didn't qualify for he wasn't able to race the 500 that year. He missed Spring Bristol that year. So, for the Bristol side of the conversation, that's another race that he didn't get to race at.
But the fact that he came back and won the championship that year, I honestly gained a lot of respect for him that year.
Well, and the race that gained me a ton of respect watching him was the fact that he won a road course on that repaired leg. He won Sonoma that year. I think that was his first win since coming back as well, in a 1-2 finish with his brother. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Out. Especially with a repaired leg.
Exactly.
All right, Greg. All right, go ahead.
Our picks.
Yep, I think we're doing race picks next, if I'm not mistaken.
Are we doing the wheel, or are we doing our actual picks?
Wheel was only for Vegas.
Which means wheel will return when we get to the playoffs.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm sad.
Larson, Chase Elliott, and Noah Gregson off the table.
And Chris Buescher was locked in by Bam, I think.
Yes. So
what you should do, Greg, what you should do is go by where they are in total points right now based off of who's actually on the pod. Well, then you gotta wait.
Got 1 second.
I mean, I'm last in the podcast right now. I'm not last overall in the standings.
All right. So I'm going to go from first to last.
So yeah, the wheel picked a bad week for me to have Christopher Bell.
Ben, who is your pick?
You know, I'm going to go with the hot hand. Let's go with Ty Gibbs.
That's a pretty good pick.
Ryan, you are next.
I'll take Kyle Busch.
All right, who's next?
Wayne on Greg, tell us.
Greg, fall asleep over there?
No, he's penciling it in. Tino. I saw that you were like speaking, but I don't know if you're on mute or not.
No, I was gonna wait for him to say Tina. I was saying Jimmy Johnson. It was just gonna give us some silence and let us. Man, honestly,
did anyone see that Kamui Kobayashi is gonna be running the number 50 for 2311 this week, or not this weekend, but next weekend at Circuit of the Americas?
Yep,
57.
No, he's gonna be in the number 50. For them.
Really?
He is going to be in their third car, but it's going to be number 50 this week, not number 67.
Yep.
And I do mean next weekend.
Okay.
You know, speaking of the Americas, not this week.
Anyway, Frank, you good?
I am going to pick Ross Chastain.
Hey, who's
smiling, man?
All right. Tyler, you are next.
Ooh, I'm going to have to go to Toyota camp. I'm going Christopher Bell.
And Jamie.
Do I want to pick him again for a second week in a row? Is there a rule against picking the same guy 2 weeks in a row?
No.
I don't want to do it, but I might do it. I'm going to have to go the villain again.
Dennis the Menace.
Yep.
Dennis the Menace.
So a couple of the other guys who I had on my list, I had Ty Gibbs on my list. I also had Tyler Reddick on my list of potential guys to pick if they didn't get taken early. And Reddick wasn't taken at all, I don't think, at least not yet. Maybe some of the other
people. I actually was thinking about Reddick, but I'm like, you know what? With the way Christopher Bell ran this last weekend, I think he's going to be a threat this weekend.
Yeah, Bell was also on that list of guys. Because like, when I look at drivers who have done well at Bristol, especially on the younger side, it's like, I think about Kyle Larson, and I think about a lot of the drivers who have that same skill set, and it's like, okay, Bell, Reddick. Sharing that similar skill set of dirt.
Funny enough, Kyle, I said who was the last Bristol Spring Glitter. I'm talking not dirt, I'm talking concrete.
Well, that would have been Joey Logano in the summer of 2020, technically, in June.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, Joey Logano and Chase Elliott beat off each other.
Oh, yeah, so Keselowski came through to win that race then.
Yeah, and I was gonna bring that up. Dino talked about RFK kind of bouncing back. This is probably the first shot that Brad Keselowski has a good shot at claiming a victory. Because he's been on a drought. Does anybody remember like how many races he's in on his
It's over 100 at this point.
For what?
Yeah, since Brad Keselowski's last win, it was at what? What was his last win? The 20 was it his? Was it the Coke 600 of 2020? Hmm.
Brad Keselowski last won at the 2021 Geico 500 at Talladega.
Okay. So how many races since then? Did anyone know?
I don't know. I just know it's been a long time. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing. Like, I think this is the first real shot that he's had at winning a race in recent memory. What's your thought on Brad K, Greg?
I'll answer that in just a second. I totally forgot to add Valentino to our race picks points. Valentino, who's your pick?
I'll probably go Brad K. You know what? Go ahead and give me Blaney. I'm sorry. Give me Blaney again.
It's not that bad.
Dude, is it weird to say that Brad, is it weird to say Brad's 40 years old?
Okay, I got it. It's 102 races. I was pretty spot on by saying it was over 100. It's been 102 since the last win. I was pretty close.
I thought you were just taking a shot at him. I didn't realize how accurate that was. Holy smokes.
I said it was over 100.
He actually is rifling. He's rifling Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s streak.
Yep.
What?
To answer your question, Jamie, I agree with you. I do think that this might be Brad K's best shot at breaking that winless streak.
We got a good set of tracks coming up. Bristol Cota, then Martinsville, or not Martinsville,
Richmond, Martinsville.
Richmond. Yeah. It's gonna be
then the dreaded Texas Motor Speedway.
Yep.
I'm ready for Darlington, baby.
But and say going back though to races that Keselowski probably should have won though. Last year's Atlanta Spring Race, he absolutely should have won. I was reacting to that race live on YouTube like I do, and I was saying the entire final run, it's like, you gotta make that block on Logano, you gotta make that block on Logano, and he just never did, and just let him right around. Came up second in that race.
Dude, they still have it labeled, they still have it labeled the Brickyard race as the Verizon 200 still.
Yeah.
I love that.
I still don't know why that isn't the race after the Olympic break. Like, that would make so much sense to spend your Olympic break hyping up the return of the Brickyard to whatever casual viewers are watching the Olympics in here. Ooh, a 30th anniversary return race? Maybe I'll tune in. Versus trying to hype up Richmond 2.
Dude, I'm still excited for fucking the fact that Darlington's the fucking cut operator then. For the regular season.
Yeah, I think I am the only person excited for Richmond 2. I think I am probably the only person excited for Richmond 2.
No, you want to know what date shot still weirds me out? The fact that September 15th is in Lock and Slun.
Yep.
All right, gentlemen, if we're finished up, because I have to go to that.
That was a great episode tonight, guys. As always, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Fanatics, W Energy, Bulletproof Coffee, Duke Cannon, Sleafs. What was that new one we just got?
Century PC.
Thank you for supporting us. Be sure to check out the links in our podcast description. And with that, I'm Greg.
Did you mention Dubby as well?
Yes, I did.
Don't forget Dubby.
Yep. But with that, I'm Greg, Ken, Valentino, Tyler, Ryan. This has been the Lap Down. And we will see you guys after Bristol.
Deuces!
Deuces!